I'd like to share a reading by Rumi that is in the spirit of this inner work, and that'll be a starting place. I think for many of you, this is not a new reading. It's a favorite of mine because of focus in the spirit of the words. It's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So I ask you simply just to be with that and relax into it and just see how it resonates with you. There's so many different facets of this inner work, which also implies work in life, work in relationship. It's not necessarily isolated because we live in a whole life. We live within ourselves and we live in relationship. So the primary focus of this class is going to be on the inner compassion. But there's always implications for relationship and how we respond or react to life, to situations, to other people, to our relationships. One of the points I wanted to make today, it has to do with how we in general approach this work or other kinds of inner work, process work, spiritual transformation, whatever you want to call it. And I think one of the things that I'm working with, discovering, exploring, and deepening at the more I do this is, number one, the recognition that I sense in myself and in others that there is what could be in something that could be stated as, I want to do this. I want to do this class, engage in this practice, because I want to get better. I want to improve myself. I want to transform. And I want to address this because I think there's some important distinctions, some subtleties in this intention that I think are very important to this work of inner compassion. So for me, the work of self-compassion is not about getting better. It's not about self-improvement. It's not about the intention from a particular perspective to be more compassionate with ourselves. So I think one of the things that's implicit in the desire to get better, in the desire to improve ourselves, to improve even the quality of our relationship with ourselves, with life, our well-being, et cetera, is that very often in moments of experience, of life experience, if we're experiencing something that we want to get better in relation to, something that we're uncomfortable with, a pattern, a relationship experience, a life experience. In that moment of discomfort, very often the desire to get better implies a judgment about that experience. I'm uncomfortable with something. I'm reacting with my anger or my fear again, and I don't like it. I want to get over this. And there's a kind of inner violence that we do to ourselves when we approach our inner experience, and in some ways we push it away. We make it alien to ourselves. And in a subtle way, we make the inner experience, that part of us that we don't like and we want to get better, we kind of make it an inner enemy. So there's this either subtle or very obvious way of judging our present experience because it's uncomfortable. And it's that tendency to approach our inner experience, I think, is one of the most important elements in this work of self-compassion, so that we can bring our attention to it. Because when we're wanting to change something at any one moment, there is the tendency to energetically push it away. I'm angry, I'm uncomfortable, I may be feeling lonely, confused, whatever the experience is. There's that tendency to close ourselves off from it because we don't like it. There's a lot of different forms of what I'm describing as closing ourselves off, pushing the experience away. So I'm speaking in very broad terms. So for me, this work of self-compassion, which also can be described as unconditional self-acceptance, involves so that any experience that we have, the discomfort, the parts of us that we're not pleased with, our reaction to people that we're not pleased with, we may project it and think that it's the other person that has to change. It can be, from that perspective, counterintuitive to say that what's important in this work is that I want to approach whatever it is in my experience as an expression of my life force. It is an expression of my basic aliveness. And it's being experienced and expressed, perhaps, as painful, as uncomfortable, as distressing, disconnecting. But the principle, one of the principles in this work is that all suffering, all discomfort, all of the experiences that we regard as unpleasant and we want it to go away is actually life itself moving towards us, speaking to us, asking for something. And what this life is asking for is attention, is awareness. If it could speak more directly, this contracted, painful life is saying, see me, hear me, listen to me. Give me space to be without trying to make me something different than what I am. When that part of us is heard and allowed to be, then there's a profound kind of relaxation and sense of fulfillment of, ah, now I'm just seen, I'm heard. This is one of the expressions when we receive empathy and we're fully heard. So while this may not seem entirely new as far as conceptually, for me it's a simple process that I've noticed is so pervasive in my experience and in the experience that I've observed in others, that the essential practice of allowing what is there, especially when it's uncomfortable, and that the principle in this is that the spirit of self-compassion is that the space of allowing, the space of unconditional acceptance regards all of experience, whether we label it as positive, joyful, wanted, or negative and unwanted, is equal. It's equally held. It's equally regarded. It's equally honored. And so to say this is easy, to practice it is the ongoing practice of unconditional self-acceptance. So that's one point I want to make. I'll pause to hear if there's any questions for clarification or hear if there's anybody who for whom this resonates and it touches you in such a way.
I tend to believe that my motivation for taking this course and pursuing this understanding, in my thinking anyway, is to try to change. I mean, it's to try to have more life, to be more alive. It seems like what you're saying and what makes sense, but I still experience this sort of tension that I want to change. I want relief, I guess. And the way it apparently is available is by giving up wanting it. And I guess maybe I just need to be with that tension. I don't know, but yeah. Does that make any sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Well, I'm glad you brought it up because it brings forth the kind of clarity that's essential in this work. I think that what you're saying is that the sort of the paradoxical part of it is that in you, I think, and in all of us, there is a wanting. There is a quality of life, perhaps, that is less than wonderful, uncomfortable, painful, all of those things that we experience. And I think there's a natural impetus in life. What is the longing and the yearning for a fuller life is there. It's present. It's part of the life force, and we recognize it. So the distinction that I'm making is the distinction between this natural longing for a quality of life that is more enhanced, more life-serving, and the kind of seeking that pushes away our present experience, that doesn't fully allow the quality of our experience, that judges it and criticizes it. or that even may not have a verbal criticism or a mental judgment, but that has an energetic holding in and tension where we actually block the life flow, where we don't allow our inner pain, the space, to be fully felt, fully heard, fully sensed. So when we do that, then there is the natural unfolding and healing and transformation that takes place. But we want to be very careful that we distinguish between the seeking that pushes away our present experience and makes it bad, and the longing that opens into our present experience and with deep self-compassion allows the life that's at the core and the heart of that pain to be fully heard and fully experienced.
I think I'm beginning to get it, that there's more than one kind of reaching after.
Yeah. Seeking seeks out from the mind, from the head, resists experience. Yearning goes into the heart and opens into the present life quality that's in us, similar to the reading that I had. It invites every experience in us and holds it as sacred. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to give some feedback about what I noticed in myself after you did the reading from Rumi. I felt some dismay. My thought was, oh no, I've forgotten again. And I had some hope of, if I take this class, I'll change that. I just noticed that, and your explanation and the way you opened the class today has helped me view this moment in myself as an illustration of what you were saying. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Each of these things that I share are, there are elements, there are aspects or dimensions of this consciousness, and I'm hoping that in sharing them it helps to highlight them. There are many, many, but I'm only going to bring two or three up during each class. There's another one that I want to bring forth. It has to do with the nature of our reaction when we're in a reactive place. And the way I define reaction is very similar to how in NVC we say it's an inner judgment or, you know, the jackal reaction. Reactive thinking that is life alienated. My experience is that when we react to a life situation, whether it's something that we do or don't do or something else someone else does or says in relation to us, what the primary reaction to is not to the trigger. If someone says something to us or if there's a life situation that occurs that is painful for us or that we're uncomfortable with, what I believe is distressing isn't the actual trigger itself or the occurrence. What's distressing is our inner reaction, is that when we receive something, when we hear something from someone, we might tend to judge it as, well, that was judgmental or that was violent or that's inappropriate or that was inconsiderate. Whatever our reaction is, whenever we react to something, we hold something inside. There's a tension, there's a holding, there's our own inner judgment or story about it. And our primary reaction that creates distress is our reaction to that, what we do with our inner reaction, and not what the other person said. We often tend to hold the other person or the trigger responsible for our reaction. So the primary practice is always within myself. So it's always, how do I hold the experience that I have in relationship to a particular trigger? So when I'm able to hold that within myself, then I'm able to be what can be called a self-responsible stance, that only I can meet my own experience, and it's not you that is to blame for what I'm feeling. So again, I think this is a really simple concept. In practice, it becomes challenging to actually experience it. So that whenever we are in life, engaged in whatever form of self-compassion or self-connection that we want, self-empathy, for me, my first response is to, what is the life in me? How am I interpreting? What is my longing in this? So it always goes to my inner life, particularly if I'm in relationship with someone else, if I'm communicating. It's not so much what are the words I'm going to use. Am I going to empathize? How am I going to approach them? What language am I going to use? But it's how do I meet my inner life is the most important approach. Does anybody have any response, question or clarification.
That sounds like perfect contrast to the first point that you made. Basically, when we give space and a sense of acceptance to the outer experience, we get peace, and when we react against it, we get distress. I love the way those two points you made fit together so well.
Yeah, thank you.
You just expressed a concept that is exceedingly foreign to me. So where you were thinking about the reaction that we have, that it's really not to the trigger, but it's our response to the reaction. And you were moving in the direction saying that we can learn something, how to better manage that or how to better experience that. Where am I headed with that?
Yeah, it sounds like you want to be able to connect to it experientially to have an experiential understanding of what I was talking about so you can apply it to your own life and experience. Is that accurate?
I thought you were speaking along something forward thinking, like we can learn to do something about that jackal thinking. And I'm trying to grasp what is possible to manage that reaction to the reaction. What am I supposed to do with it?
I'll give you a quick response to that, but I think there'll be more of an opportunity to actually experience this in the exercise I'm going to suggest that we work in pairs with. The opportunity is to first, when we have an experience, to say someone says something to you that you don't like. They may say something that sounds judgmental or critical and doesn't really give you the kind of understanding or the being seen as you like, as you enjoy. So our usual tendency is to judge the other person or judge ourselves. Whereas when you have a reaction to what they say, approaching your own inner reaction is what is going to allow the shift and the transformation to take place. So when you find yourself, you say, judging yourself, you recognize that within yourself. You notice that it's an inner reaction. So you may feel some tightness. You may feel fear or hurt or anger within yourself. So it's approaching the inner experience that's going to help you connect to what's alive in you. This is the point of what empowers the transformation. So that's a kind of a quick answer. I'm hoping if that's helpful just to hear that.
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I have one more hand, and then we'll move on.
I get stuck, I guess, on accountability. It seems like there are things that people can do, violence, that kind of stuff, where I don't want to let them off the hook. I don't want to feel like, okay, it's all my stuff. It's all how I'm responding. It's like, it seems a lot of it, I have a lot of choice. I have a lot of responsibility, but they do too.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. What I said does not preclude the other person's responsibility in the matter. Each person is, for me, fully responsible for their choices, their actions. And so what I'm saying is that if you have a reaction to someone that someone says, it doesn't mean that potentially they're not able to act in such a way that is more fully conscious, more fully considerate of you and your needs or other people's needs. What I'm saying doesn't preclude that at all. It doesn't mean that only you are responsible. What I'm saying is that each of us is 100% responsible for the quality of our inner experience. The other person is not responsible for how you experience what they say. They're only responsible for their actions and for what they do. And it just so happens that my experience is that the more I own fully what I experience, am I able to communicate to them in such a way and empathize with them so that will empower or enable them more easily or more likely that they can then connect with their own choices and their own needs that they were trying to meet. I'm wondering how you're hearing that.
That helps a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, great. I think what I'd like to do is move on to go over the exercise. This is a basic exercise in self-compassion. Each person, what I'd like you to do is to bring to your attention something that's alive in you, something perhaps you had an experience with another person, and it's something that you could describe as not fully connected, needs were unmet, there's a painful or difficult experience that you had. That's step number one. Step number two is that just identify the factual observation. What actually happened? See, briefly, be as brief as you can with this. You can say, my friend Fred said that I'm never on time and that I don't care about him, for example. Just is really brief. And then after that, this is about the self-connection, is that notice how you're feeling in yourself, in your body. This is a slow process. Notice how you're feeling. And notice if what need wasn't met in that. Just pick one. Is it acceptance? Is it understanding? Cooperation? And notice that in your experience, is there a feeling or an experience of the lack of this happening? Was it a lack of the need? So is the unmetness in your focus? Notice if that's going on. There's a quality in your experience of this didn't work, I'm unhappy with this, and there's a kind of contracting experience, a pulling in constriction that goes with lack or deficiency. And then next, notice if you're thinking something about it. Is there a story that you're telling yourself? Are you analyzing or judging yourself or the other person? Just notice that, identify it. And then notice if there is whatever you're valuing or wanting that didn't happen. Bring your attention to that. Is there a desiring, a longing to be seen in the situation? Are you valuing understanding, cooperation, consideration, whatever that quality is? Notice if there's a valuing in that. And bring your attention to this quality itself in yourself, in your experiencing. Even if it wasn't met, somebody says something or said something to you that you judged as unkind, and that you value kindness, warmth, and acceptance. Bring your attention to that which you value, that which you long for. Warmth, acceptance, kindness, whatever it happens to be. And notice how you feel about that quality, that there's a fullness to it even if it was unmet in the situation. Notice how that feels in your body. So I'm going to stop there. Those are the essential steps. I'm hoping it was short enough you were all able to jot down some quick notes. So I want to say one or two things before we go into the small groups. What I'd like to do is just to allow 10 minutes. So each person is going to be in a small group of four. And it's not a really long period of time. So what you can do is quickly choose one person who's going to go through this themselves and have the other people just be present, or one at a time, support the person in this process. See if you can go through an experience and go through all of those aspects of the experience as I described them. That's going to bring you back into the whole group, and then I'd love to hear any sharing or questions that came out of that experience. Okay, we're back together again. I see already a hand up.
That was the most frustrating and wonderful experience I've ever had. I was put in a group of three, and neither of them existed. So I got to do the process by myself, and thank God I knew it well enough, Robert, that I could just really deepen into my annoyance at iLink. I hate this so much. And then I really deepened into how much my longing to be seen mattered, because I raised my hand, and that you can't see hands being raised when you have a technical difficulty in the breakouts. And so it deepened into just wanting to be seen. And it felt so yummy, and I could release the mourning and the sense of loss. And it was a great process, and I'm so glad I got to do it alone.
Wow. I'm so happy and impressed hearing how focused you were able to be, Punita, with the intention of that process, given your frustration with how it turned out. So I'm so happy to hear what you did with what you were given.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. I'm celebrating just hearing your sharing. I'm noticing there are more hands up, and I'd like to hear from all of you. We'll see if you can be concise, but I want it to be thorough.
Okay. What's alive in me is an issue I had with my 13-year-old daughter doing some homework the other night, and my observation is that I asked her, about an hour after the frustrating math problem that she didn't finish, I asked her if we could go back and work on it some more, and she just said, no way, I'm not doing that. And I didn't push it because I know that hasn't worked in the past, hasn't felt good. And my feeling was in my body was very sad, and my face and my throat were really tight and sort of crumpling, and there was pressure kind of coming up into my throat, and sort of like a sad, I don't know, I call it like a raining feeling in my chest.
Yeah.
And the need that seemed to not be met surprised me. I was really, what I noticed was that I was wanting a lot more support for my daughter in the classroom, really feeling that her teacher's not a good match for her at all, and really scares my daughter constantly, chronically, all the time. She's afraid of her. And so then when my daughter gets to this type of frustrating situation, she reacts by not finishing the problem because she's kind of getting back at the teacher. She's almost actually even said that in words. So I'm really wanting support as far as her being in a better school situation, but my daughter really wants to stay there. So I'm really frustrated. And then it kind of shifted for me wanting support as a parent in my decision making about whether to move her without her agreement or whatever to a different school. And yeah, I have a definite story of judging this teacher. Even though I really like the teacher, I just don't think she's the right match for my child. And then when I tried to bring attention to my need for support, it took me a little while to turn, you know, to shift over to that positive part.
Yeah.
But I started feeling like this really kind of happy, rising up, expanding feeling in my chest, and just I started smiling and just feeling really happy to think about support and what that can feel like.
Yeah. So I want to just thank you for sharing what you did. And there was a lot to that experience. And so I just want to pick two things that you shared. One was that when you were putting your attention on the what I would call the pain of the unmet need, that the unfulfilled need for support, you said you had a hard time perhaps just putting your attention on the need or the quality of that need by itself. And I think it's important, I'm speaking in general, but when we connect with ourselves, it's important for full self-connection and self-compassion is that we allow the pain, we allow the mourning to occur, so that whatever sadness or discouragement or you felt in your emotions because you did not experience full support in relation to your daughter, that she didn't receive the support, you want to see her experience that support in her learning, that it's important to allow that mourning to occur. So inherent in that painful experience of that need not being met, you can then shift into, after you can fully mourn it, into the fullness of support and how you enjoyed it. And when you shared that you were smiling and you could feel the quality of support as you got in touch with it. So fully mourning and then allowing yourself to enjoy the fullness of the need because it's an inherent value, whether it's met or not. That's what I heard you share. So it's just a couple of pieces of feedback I wanted to give you on that, Jill.
And it's great feedback, and in 10 minutes there'd be no way for me to do that.
Well, I know that it's a certain period of time, and so I'm wanting to experiment with how each person can have a full experience in this kind of a setting. And I know 10 minutes is not a really long time to have the fullness of that experience.
Thank you.
Robert?
Yes. Did you have something you'd like to share?
Yes. I had a very good experience going through the process. It was very helpful. I won't go through all the steps, but when we got toward the end, when I was identifying the longing that was in me, Lori was very helpful in kind of processing that for me, asking me to fully feel it in my body and then to be able to experience the beauty of that need. But it did leave me with a question, and you mentioned that these needs are inherent within us, and so I'm just wondering, the idea here at the very end, after we've fully mourned the unmet need, to experience that we can give ourselves that need within ourselves, within the fact that all these needs are within us, and we can give whatever need we have, whether it's kindness, acceptance, or support, to ourselves?
Yes, that for me is a really important part of this whole process. I would describe it in slightly different language, although the experience could be the same. I wouldn't say so much that we can give that need to ourselves, but that we can get in touch with that particular quality that manifests as a longing, as an inner valuing. We can get in touch with that because those qualities already, they're inherent to our being. So when we get in touch with them and we feel them, even if they're unmet, there is an experience of nurturing, of wholeness, of being fed when we feel and experience the energy of that need. So there's an inherent value in getting in touch with it and feeling it. For me, I'm not suggesting that it's a substitute for having this need be fulfilled in relationships or in life, but that it adds to the quality of our experience so that we are oriented towards the fullness of what we value rather than oriented towards, in certain experiences, the deficiency or the lack. Is that helpful?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. I want more connection, I think, with people. I guess I want to know if there is something that is meaningful to you from today where a learning or a sense of self-connection was enhanced for you, or some sense of well-being, something that worked for you. I'd like to hear if anybody has anything to share around that. If anybody has anything to share with regard to, was there anything valuable today? Any of my sharing or the experience that has been helpful?
I just wanted to thank you again for your response to the question I had earlier about the tension I was feeling between confusing my seeking with my longing, and it was very helpful. It just makes me feel that much closer to really allowing the longing to be present for me without the confusion about the seeking part. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that.
I got in touch with an experience of rejection recently and the need for acceptance. And then I remembered experiencing a really deep acceptance in a one-to-one session that you and I had done. So I connected with that memory, and it was like, wow, there it is again. I can feel the energy of that acceptance in my heart again, and it was incredible how quickly it shifted. The great part is that towards the end of that session with you, I was already starting to get a headache because I didn't want it to end. And since then, I've been wondering how to get back to that space, and suddenly I found out today. I just have to remember the experience and connect with that feeling in my heart again, and I can experience that acceptance. So I'm really happy today. Thank you, Robert.
Great. Really happy to hear it.
Just wanted to make sure I'm understanding, because what I think I'm hearing is that we're to accept all of the feelings, you know, like little children, just that not pushing an experience away or not pushing a feeling away, to be able to be aware and accepting of them all. Am I understanding that focus of that exercise is to try to just experience the feelings, you know, not trying to run to a goal, but more to just experience the variety of feelings that come up around the event?
That's part of it. That is a central aspect of it. So it's not just the feelings, but, you know, I didn't take a lot of time to go into the depth of it, but it's every aspect of your experience, your emotional feelings, the energetic feeling you feel in your body, the tension, the tightness that often is associated with a painful feelings. So it's to create an actual experiential allowing, a space, not a concept that says I allow, but you actually allow the energy of the feeling to be in your body and to actually feel it. So that is, for me, a very central aspect of self-compassion. Does that answer your question?
I think so.
Yeah. It's an ongoing practice. So that my experience is that the more I do this practice, the more I learn, the more new elements reveal themselves, perhaps more questions come up. So it's an ongoing practice and exploration that is ever deepening. I want to reiterate the principle is that in every painful experience, there is at the heart of it, at the core of it, that my allowing and my compassionate approach reveals is that in every painful experience, there's a deep longing for something.
It's like a noticing of that deep longing.
Yeah.
You know, not like trying to stay there or hold on to it, but more like an awareness of it.
Yes, it's an awareness of it. It's like riding a wave. If I'm in the ocean and I'm riding a wave, I ride it. I am with it. As I notice it, I feel it. I feel my longing for acceptance in the midst of my experience that my mind calls rejection. There's a longing in every painful experience. There's the life force in us that so much wants well-being.
I'm good for right now. Thank you.
Okay. Well, please hang in there because this is, again, maybe perhaps touching some of the surfaces where there's more depth to experientially explore. So thank you. I appreciate your feedback. I see two more hands up.
For me, longing is a feeling. Is that not correct?
For me, it's feeling in the sense of, well, it depends on how I define feeling. I do experience longing as a feeling, but it's a feeling for something specific. It's a quality. What am I longing for? So it includes a quality that I'm longing for.
So when I experience rejection, that feeling that comes up, for me, feels like longing.
So feeling perhaps underneath or inside of what you're calling or experiencing as rejection. You're longing.
It's another feeling of longing.
Is there, to say right now, if you can reflect quickly on what your experience, in an experience of rejection, do you not long for acceptance?
Absolutely.
So it's that feeling of the quality of acceptance that you allow yourself to feel.
It doesn't take me very long to get to the longing, because I think that's probably one of my dominant feelings is a longing for a lot of things, acceptance and communication.
I like that you can connect to it rather readily and quickly. For me, I consider that very important.
That would not be the initial feeling to identify.
Yeah, I think initially most of us experience the contracting, pulling back of the painful experience, perhaps hurt, frustration, or something like that. I think that's usually our initial reaction to an experience that's unwanted. In the midst of that, I mean...
I certainly am aware of that, but it just doesn't take very long for me to say, I get it, here it is again.
Yeah, and so, again, this is one aspect of it. So there are other aspects that unfold from that. Once you feel the longing and you can deepen your awareness and you're sort of reverberating with that quality of acceptance without any attachment to any particular outcome. So sit with that a while.
Yeah. Thank you.
I see another hand.
I felt this kind of out-breath come when I connected to the need that I was really longing for. And that felt like a release for the system. But I struggled with the sense of to connect with the fullness of that need. It was like that it's a real core unmet need for me, this one for connection. And I couldn't feel any fullness. I couldn't connect to the joy of what connection would look like. It just felt too painful to go there. But I just want to honor a feeling of wholeness even in the unmetness, like this outbreath. And I don't want to force myself. I felt like, I should find this beauty of the need, and I felt like it would be artificial. So I just want to share because I kind of want to value something felt whole even though I wasn't feeling the fullness of the need.
It makes perfect sense. I'm glad you're sharing. The sharing brings forth what's important to me is that honoring the fullness of your experience. So if it's the painful experience of the unmet need, there's a core unmet need in you for connection. There's value in just fully allowing that without pushing it or without forcing yourself into the beauty of it. For me, the mourning contains the beauty. They aren't different. It's not like there's mourning, there's pain, and then there's beauty that's different than that, because we only feel pain because there's something unfulfilled that is beautiful. So there's a beauty and the fullness contained in the pain that is not being experienced as fully. So again, this is an ongoing practice to be with that inner experience. Was that helpful to hear that?
It is, but I've had experiences when my body felt full up of something or full up of that energy, and it didn't feel full up of any of that, but there was still a wholeness.
Yes. So I'm hearing that that's what you experienced, and to be fully allowing of that as your full experience. It was what it was, and it wasn't something else.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate that support for that.
Yes, yes, you're welcome. Okay. I do want to say something, my own final words, how I'm feeling is, it's a feeling that doesn't even have words, but it carries in it a deep care and a deep concern for everybody that's here and present on the call, because I sense, guess, intuit that you all so much desire and want to live within yourselves a quality of life that is beautiful, that is full, that not only you can support yourself, but you can support others in your world, in your life, that you care and you love. And I so much want to support this spirit and this life in you. For me, the dream and the vision of this coming together for people who are in different parts of the world is so important to me. And I so much want us all to be able to meet together in this forum so that we can share community and share our well-being and learn and support each other. So that's a bit of what's alive in me right now. My heart feels in a way very tender and open, wanting to support all of you and in this vision and in this spirit. I'm grateful that you're all here. I look forward to our next connection. Thank you all.